Hey everyone, how's it going? My name is Matt Jarboe. Welcome to Milk Carton Mysteries episode number 54 for the 18th of November 2020. There is a weird amount of stories to get to today. I'm talking about a couple missing persons, as well as the story of a Florida man who is out on parole, arrested for killing his girlfriend in a violent rage. That whole story is absolutely crazy. We're going to be talking about that and a whole lot more today. So real quick, if you are listening to this on iTunes or Spotify or Google Podcasts or Stitcher, please be sure to hit that subscribe. That helps out the channel quite a bit. And if you want to just get in on more of the action, be sure to head on over to Instagram.com/MilkCartonCast, which is my new Instagram where I post cases as well as the podcast and stuff. So a lot of places to catch up with the podcast, as well as facebook.com/groups/themilkcarton. You know, got to get my shilling out of the way first. But for right now, let's jump in to the first story of the day. This is going to be a crazy one. This is sad. This is tragic. This is disgusting. And I want to know more. There is a triple homicide that happened in North Carolina in Pender County. The sheriff's office says here that a pregnant woman and her boyfriend were shot. And currently a murder investigation is underway. This is what we know. The murder of a man and a pregnant woman in the Maple Hill area on Sunday is being considered a triple homicide, according to District Attorney Ben David. He says, this is a brutal murder that needs to be solved. We need to get justice for three victims, which is absolutely true. It is absolutely true. In these situations, justice is 100% needed. Now, here are the victims. Here's what we know. Destiny Denise Green, 22, and her boyfriend, William Lenwood Coley III, 26, were found shot dead at their home. Now, this is a triple homicide, so you may be asking yourself, where's the third victim? Well, Green's unborn child, who was 7 months in gestation, and unfortunately, they confirmed this after the autopsy came back, that the child had died, saying here that the North Carolina law is clear and has been clear since 2011 that the murder of an unborn child is treated the same as an adult or someone who is already outside of the womb. The one exception, it is not a death penalty eligible case. That's what they're saying. It's not a death penalty eligible case, but you can only get life in prison without the possibility of parole. That is the maximum sentence that can be gotten for someone who kills an unborn child. The way I view that one is, look, if you knowingly kill an unborn child like that, I don't know if I would argue against the death penalty, even though from a tax perspective, it's definitely cheaper on the citizens. Anyway, he says here that, I'm confident in telling you that we are now treating this like three counts of first degree murder. Good. You know, right. There's not a lot of information that's known right now. They're not giving any other details about the murders. That's what we know. Like, this is just a setup. It's a triple homicide. It's in a kind of an unincorporated area of Maple Hill in North Carolina. In fact, I looked it up, and if you're watching this on YouTube, I have a Google Maps of the address, because I found the address of the home, and it's located in the middle of nowhere, basically. And there are two other houses that are in close proximity, but it's possible that the persons in the 421 residence did not hear or see anything, depending on the time of day, depending on what they were doing. But it's also possible that the middle house, because there are three here in this array, that there is no one there. I don't know even when this satellite image was taken, but that is what I was able to find. So it did leave me asking my own questions about who was there and who saw what. And of course, what we're going to find out as this investigation unfolds. So going back to this, the sheriff here says, what we will always try to do is corroborate information or impeach people as they are providing information. And if they are relaying details that only someone that has intimate details of the investigation could know, then that means they were at the scene. But if we release all those details and someone could try to claim a reward or get out of trouble by talking to us when they weren't there. Those details, of course, will come out, and we want them to, but not at this time because we have an investigation or an investigative need to keep them close to the chest. Well, and I get that. You know, one of the problems with covering true crime, and this is true for anyone who does this, is that when you want details, because the details are really what matters in these cases, you don't always get them when you cover contemporary news like I do. So you have to kind of wait for stuff to come out. And sometimes details come out a lot faster, specifically if a suspect has been caught, or if they have enough to arrest somebody or something along those lines. Now, the ATF has actually decided to jump in on this one. They have reached out to the sheriff's office with a $10,000 reward for information that leads to the identification, arrest, and conviction of anyone involved. So it's not just 10 grand to point a finger and go that person and not have it be anything, but you have to have clear, concise details that will get a person arrested and convicted for this triple homicide. That, of course, can be found. If you have that information, and you might, you can submit it to the ATF by calling 1-888-ATF-TIPS. That's 1-888-ATF-TIPS, or by email at ATFTIPS@ATF.gov. Or if you have any information and you are local, you can contact Detective Sergeant Mark Lobel at 910-259-1212. That's 910-259-1212. And the thing is, like this is an important issue. This case to me is an important case. And I say that because what we're dealing with is a triple homicide, a pregnant woman 7 months shot dead, her boyfriend shot dead. The question then becomes why? Well, in one of the groups that I'm in, this case came up. People were talking about it. People with knowledge of the area came forward to discuss it. And what they had said is that there's a lot of drug crime in this area, that there's a lot of drug-related violence in this area, and that it's possible in this unincorporated part of Maple Hill, that is exactly what happened, that is unfortunately what happened, and that it's something related to drugs and there's a deal gone bad or something along those lines. And if I'm being honest with you, looking at the remote nature of where the house is located, looking at just the general details as they are presented, that is where I'm leaning. My speculation is leading towards a deal having gone bad. Perhaps Destiny and her boyfriend ripped somebody off or something along those lines, and then that person retaliated, or it was just a bad transaction. I don't know. Or maybe they caught someone trying to rip them off and it turned violent. I don't know the specifics. Of course, this is when I speculate. This is always a part of the podcast that gets me into trouble, is when I speculate on stuff. But that's kind of what the Occam's razor of the situation is telling me, is just that, okay, in this scenario, what we are dealing with is a person who gunned down two people in their home in an area that is remote, but not entirely uninhabited. It's away from a lot of noise pollution in the city. So, you know, out there, I would assume that, you know, gunshots would echo. And so somebody out there heard something. And I say this as a person who lives in an unincorporated part of my own city and where it's legal to fire off weaponry here, provided you have a target that's like not a human or deer. So, you know, and gunshots echo even through the forest. And out there, somebody heard something, somebody knows something, and I think somebody will tune up. $10,000 reward may not seem like much, but looking at the state of the area and how run down it appears to be from just Google satellite imagery, that could get you a nice renovation or perhaps even a nice new used car. I don't know. But I'm hoping that somebody comes forward soon, because I would love to see this case wrapped up with a nice, neat little bow before the end of the year. And the murder of a 7-month-old, baby in the womb, man. 7 months into gestation. That's like, it's, you know, 2 months to go. It's like, that's the beginning of the third trimester. It's terrible. It's disgusting. And it's, I want them brought to justice. I have two girls. So for me, it's like, and they're young. So these kind of stories kind of get under my skin a little bit. But anyway, I do want to hear your thoughts on this one. What's your speculation? Definitely let me know. All right, let's move over to talk about a situation in Texas where you have a missing teenager who vanished in the middle of the night, and her family found her window open and her screen cut. Her name is Gloria Alvarado, and she apparently left her family, left her phone behind in the family's, it says Michigan's home here. I guess I was wrong in my details. But the authorities believe that she took her toothbrush. Now she's out on her own. I don't quite know. Let's find out more. So 10 days, Taylor police, this is Taylor, Michigan. I don't know why I said Texas. I got my notes wrong. have been searching for a 15-year-old girl who disappeared the night while her family was asleep. And the details around her disappearance are alarming, according to this article. Now, here's what we know about Gloria Alvarado. She's 15 years old. She's a straight-A student who loves her family and during the pandemic almost always never left her home. So right off the bat, my mind is already going to a couple different places simply because you have a person who is 15 years old, cooped up at her home for like 6-7 months, mysteriously disappears. I mean, we can already kind of see what we're going to, you know, you can already kind of tell what's going to be happening here to an extent, right? You can already kind of see where this thread is taking us. Now, granted, I don't know yet. You don't know yet. Let's find out. Now, for 10 days, the police have been searching for her because she disappeared while her family was asleep in the middle of the night. Her mom here says she's always cracking jokes, being silly. It's what she does, to see that it's not her character. Now, wherever she is, I hope she's okay. I wish she would just call me. I want my baby back. I want her to call me. And that's entirely, I mean, appropriate of a mother to say. You know, so this is a girl that's always cracking jokes with her family. She's always being silly. They don't see anything out of the ordinary. There's nothing there that's happening. And then she's just poof, gone in the middle of the night. Now, here's what we know. This happened on November 1st, so 17 days ago. I guess I'm getting to the story a little bit late. Tina Alvarado says her daughter went to bed about 9 p.m. When Tina went to wake her up for school, she couldn't find her. Once she discovered a cut window screen and a missing 15-year-old without her phone, and mom knew instantly that something was wrong, saying, "I see the curtain was hanging, the window was wide open, the screen was cut, her phone is just laying on the bed, and Gloria is not there." She says, "Gloria is gone, she is gone," this is what the mom is saying. Now, the police were called, and they collected a 14-second video from a neighbor, where a car pulled up in front of the Alvarado's home about 1 a.m., a second man got out of the car, and the video ends. Now, so all they have at this point is a 14-second video to go on, saying, "We are constantly on the lookout to see if we see her, but no one is saying anything," says her mother. And now that it's been past 10 days, the family is desperate for answers. No one is talking. Somebody has to have seen something. And that's, you know, you like to think that. You like to think that that's the case. The Fox network in the area spoke with the detective handling the case, and they say that Taylor is working with outside agencies on the case. He says she has no past history of running away and mentioned this straight-A student has now missed a week's worth of school. I don't think it really matters in this particular case. I don't think when you look at this woman here, this little girl, this 15-year-old, I don't think that really matters to the family at this point. I think that's kind of a weird thing to say. But then again, if it's speaking to her character, right? Straight-A student, missing a week's worth of school, does seem out of character. What would prompt her to go? What would prompt her to leave her phone? What would prompt her to cut open her screened window? What would prompt her to leave behind everything but to take a toothbrush? So let's speculate on this because that's part of this. So here's kind of where I'm going with this, and I'm pretty sure you're on the same path. If she left her phone, that's probably where they're going to find most of the information. Okay, she doesn't want to be tracked. So she clearly, at least again, a theory, wanted to leave. Maybe she met a guy online. Maybe she met a couple guys online. Maybe she met someone, fell in love. This happens. In the age of COVID, in the age of the pandemic, especially in the age of online internet dating, it's not difficult for teenagers to find love on the internet. I'm a child of the 90s, and even I found dates on the internet back in the 90s. You know, like I met a girl who lived in Northern Washington when I lived in Oregon, and she drove the 4 hours to come see me one night. You know, like it can happen. And that's all I'm saying is like, it can happen. So in those moments, we don't quite know, but I think social media is going to be where they find out any information. They're probably going to find maybe a Snapchat or a TikTok or an Instagram or something that's going to allude to who this person is. Facebook would probably be the best way to do it. But that's most likely what happened. Now it's been 10 days. Actually, at this point, it's been 18 days almost. And I checked to see if there's an update. I didn't see that there was an update. So at this point, I can only assume that she's still missing. Now that's scary. That's absolutely scary. And I'm not trying to make light of the situation. Like she had troubles at home and she just wanted to get out and met a boy. But if she's gone for this long, That does have some negative implications. I don't know necessarily where things are going to go. I don't know necessarily what's going to happen. But I am concerned because a straight A student doing this all of a sudden means that there was a massive shift in her life. That something triggered her and she decided to take off. I don't know. But as always, I want to hear your thoughts. I want to hear your theories. Because, you know, I think the speculation kind of helps us process the information. And I think the speculation might sometimes open up an avenue of thought that could potentially lead to somebody remembering something and then saying something and maybe helping this girl come home. Or, not to be too grave about it or pessimistic about it, but maybe finding where she currently is at. And that may not be for the best. You know what I mean? It's the best for closure, but I don't know. I don't know here. So I always want to hear your thoughts, definitely. All right, let's jump over to the final story of the day. This one is the crazy one. This is a crazy, crazy, crazy story. What we have here is a Florida man, because it's always a Florida man, accused in horrific and deadly shooting of girlfriend while out on bail in separate sexual assault case. And if you're thinking to yourself, this can only happen in Florida, it can't, but it feels like that sometimes. Absolutely. So here's what we know. Christopher Pequeen, 33 years old, a Florida man. I love how that is a reiteration here. Is out on bail on sexual assault charges, is accused of shooting and killing his girlfriend and wounding her roommate, authorities have said. Now, I was a little bit confused just with the headline of the article. I'm like, wait, what did he kill two people? Did he just kill the one person? What happened? So this is what we know. He gunned down his girlfriend, Heather Rivenbark, following a domestic dispute at their Florida apartment, which they shared with another couple. Now, Pequeen is also allegedly shot and injured one of his roommates. This would be the girlfriend of the other couple that lives in the apartment with them. Now, county authorities were dispatched to the residence at 8:30 a.m. on November 8th after receiving reports of a shooting. Deputies arrived and found Nicolette Higgins identified as the couple's roommate, who had been pistol whipped and shot in the chest inside the apartment. They also found Rivenbark, who had sustained multiple gunshot wounds to her chest, and she later unfortunately died at the Lakeland Regional Health Medical Center. Now, what caused this? Like, what fueled this violent outrage? Well, according to this article here, the shooting was fueled by a violent physical encounter the couple had gotten into simply hours before gunfire broke out. This is coming from the roommates here. Higgins, who survived the shooting, thank God, alleged that Rivenbark burst into the room that morning, claiming that Pequeen had just tried to kill her. And according to the statement that she gave to the authorities, they say here, she told them that she was scared that Pequeen was going to kill her and that he had held his hand over her nose and her mouth so she could not breathe. Rivenbark was seeking refuge with her roommates and indicated that she intended to seek a restraining order against Pequeen. Now, an hour or two later, he entered the bedroom and allegedly shot Rivenbark, who was simply sitting on the bed. He then pointed the gun at Higgins and allegedly opened fire as she attempted to shield her roommate from the gunfire. So the roommate, the friend, dove in front of, tried to protect her friend who was being shot repeatedly in the chest, and at the same time, she was shot in the chest. Now, Pequeen then pointed the gun at the second victim, who was then trying to shield the girlfriend. He then fired what the witness believed to be two more rounds in her direction. He then allegedly turned the pistol on Higgins' boyfriend, Michael Beam, who also lives in the residence and was in the bedroom at the time of the shooting. And this is where it gets really messed up. Apparently, he pointed the gun at this guy, at Michael Beam, and told him, "You're next." But then Beam, he noped the hell out. He got the hell out. He dashed out of the room and he ran to the neighbors, who alerted the authorities, just saying he shot her. One witness told police that he heard Beam yelling shortly after hearing what he described as gunshots. Witnesses also told the police that they heard loud shots, which were described as boom, 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 around the time of the shooting. So, I mean, like, this guy was pissed, and he was clearly looking to do something. You know, he didn't care. He was just going to kill everyone, no witnesses. That's how I take it, at least. Pequeen, who had also allegedly robbed Beam and Higgins of their cell phones, then fled the property but was apprehended nearby. He was wounded in a scuffle with a police dog and required medical treatment. Oh, darn. Oh, my heart bleeds for the murderer who got wounded by a police dog. Now, what they did find was the gun, and it was partially buried. It was a 9mm gun that was unearthed by detectives beneath a palm tree of the neighboring property, when they, which they suspect Pequeen stashed there while fleeing authorities. Now, this is what we know about why he was there, about he moved into the apartment. So I hate that these articles sometimes is like they jump around in regards to like the timeline. So give me a second. But he reportedly moved into the Barstow apartment just 2 months ago. And so, you know, it wasn't like he'd been there long. I don't know how long his relationship was with Rivenbark, but this is what they're saying here. Now, according to the authorities, he's been hit with a bunch of charges, including first-degree murder, first-degree attempted murder, aggravated assault with a deadly weapon with intent to kill, robbery with a firearm, resisting arrest, striking or injuring a police dog, tampering with physical evidence, and tampering in felony life capital proceedings. Meaning, this is like multiple felony stuff here. His ass ain't coming out for a while. Now, but here's a kicker. This is where it gets even more messed up. Pequeen was actually out on bail in a case involving sexual assault allegations and unpaid child support. A real winner. A true alpha Chad. Now, this happened back in March in Lakeland, Florida. He allegedly sexually assaulted a woman while high on methamphetamine. He was charged with sexual battery and sexual violence. He was then taken into custody in April on an active warrant, but was later released on his own recognizance. A guy who was high on meth. I mean, look. You have guilty until proven innocent, right? Or innocent until proven guilty. Even though in our society, it definitely feels the other way around. So, you know, allegedly is the key word in all this kind of stuff. But when you got a guy who allegedly was high on meth and he raped a woman, perhaps maybe letting him out on the street during a pandemic is not really the best idea. But he also has several felony convictions in Florida dating back more than a decade. Now, he was found guilty in 2017 of slicing open another man's foot with a machete. In 2019, he was charged with trespassing after he was caught trying to kick in the windshield of locomotives in a train yard. He later pleaded no contest in that particular one. And right now, what we know is he's being held without bond at a Polk County Detention Center. He made his first appearance a couple weeks ago in court, hasn't yet entered a plea, and his arraignment will be on December 16th. So that's what we know about Christopher Pequeen and the fact that this dude is a psychopath who killed his girlfriend, shot her friend, the roommate, and then threatened to kill the roommate's boyfriend before fleeing and essentially punching a police dog. As that police dog was tearing a bite out of his ass. And I can't say I feel bad. I don't feel bad, to be honest with you. So, that's a crazy story. I mean, this guy, you know, it's Florida, man. That's what you expect. But this is what I'm talking about when it comes to, like, multiple felony charges. And you know, and accusations of rape, sexual assault, drug usage. And they let this guy out on his own recognizance. I'm, you know, really questioning, like, how... Is the justice system, does it do its job of rehabilitating, or does it just kind of pack him in an ISO cube for a while and then just let him hang out and then get back out there to do this crap again? You know, I mean, look, I don't want to get on like a political soapbox here, but I'm going to for a second. So deal with it. But like when you've got repeat offenders like this, clearly there's something broken with this man. Clearly there's something broken in our system that is unable to help this person. And allows him to continue getting out there to continue being just a general shitbag. In this case, he, according to his now deceased girlfriend, he had tried to kill her by suffocation. And then she fled to the roommate thinking that would be safe. But he came back in with a gun that he wasn't even supposed to have. And he killed her. And then he tried killing the roommate and the roommate's boyfriend. And then the roommate's boyfriend was like, peace out. And he ran. You know, I mean, like some people might call into question his, bravery in that regard. It's all like, dude, your girlfriend was shot in the chest and she was pistol whipped on the floor. Like, and you ran out of the room. You know, I guess I don't blame the guy, to be honest with you. And I don't think anyone should blame the guy. I think the guy did what his instincts told him to do. And I think and what he did was go to get help, which ultimately, I think saved his life. Potentially saved his girlfriend's life. Unfortunately, wasn't enough to save Rivenbark, but that's, you know, that's unfortunate. But at this point, it appears that P. Queen will probably not be getting out of jail at all ever again. And I don't know about you, but I don't feel bad. I'm not bleeding heart for this guy. Lock him up, throw away the key. You know, he's a monster, a drug on society, and quite frankly, let him fucking rot. But I just want to hear your guys' thoughts, your guys' opinions on this as always, because it's a crazy story. You know, like, what's your speculation? What's your theory? I want to hear it. And that being said, that actually wraps up today's episode of Milk Carton Mysteries. I really appreciate you guys hanging out for the last 25 minutes or so, going through these three different stories. I hope that we get some justice for Destiny Denise Green. I hope that Gloria Alvarado is able to go home. And I hope that Christopher P. Queen has himself a very bad day on the inside, being a fresh fish. That's all I'm going to say about that one. If you guys want to keep up on the action, please head over to Instagram.com/MilkCartonCast. Check us out over there. Give us a follow so you can get up to date on other cases. And then if you really want to support the channel and support the show, which I'd appreciate, Patreon.com/MattJarbo is a great way to do that. And again, just a couple dollars a month just helps keep everything afloat. Right now during the pandemic, every little bit helps. And then you can find us on iTunes, Spotify, Google Podcasts, Stitcher. Milk Carton Mysteries is making its way around the web. And of course, as always, I love to hear your thoughts and your opinions. Facebook.com/groups/TheMilkCarton. I will talk to you guys all tomorrow. Have yourself a great day. Thank you for watching, and peace out.